Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Oregon Trappers Association podcast. Today, I'm sitting down with one of our newest board members. We're very lucky to have him. Been looking forward to talking to this guy. He's got some exciting news kind of coming up in the world of trapping. Mr. Jeff Griffith. Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. Thank you again for taking the time to sit down and talk to me. You know, we talked a few weeks ago about trying to find a date that worked for both of us to sit down and chat, and I'm glad to have you on.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, Jeff, you know, I kind of like to start out the shows just kind of getting some general, you know, background knowledge on who I'm interviewing for the listeners. And, you know, so I guess if you could give us a little bit of history, just kind of who are you, you know, how long you've been trapping, how'd you get into it, and, you know, where did you grow up and start the passion?
Okay. So I'm Jeff Griffith, and I've been a, automotive technician most of my life. I grew up on a farm and a ranch, and been around animals and everything my whole life. My dad was a butcher for his entire career, so grew up in a packing house around skinning animals and stuff like that from as long as I can remember. Dad was not a trapper. We hunted and fished and everything like that. I got into trapping. I moved away, got married, lived in Arizona, and met a guy that used to trap in Alaska. And hearing his tales and stuff was pretty fascinating. And he took me out trapping coyotes and bobcats. And so I ran a trap line with him for several years down there and had a lot of fun. Then life happens and you get busy and jobs and kids. And so I got out of it I'd moved and I was out of trapping for quite a few years, and moved again from Arizona back to Central Oregon. That's where I've grown up and born and raised, and ran into Jeff Kamini and got talking to him about trapping. He invited me to the Trapper's Rendezvous at Waldo Lake, and that was probably 10 years ago, relit my passion, and I got some traps, and I started trapping again. And I started trapping just around my house here. We had a big skunk issue, dogs getting sprayed all the time. And so that's what I started trapping, and I catch quite a few of those a year still. Yeah, and I like to use as much as I can of everything I catch. And that's kind of how I got into doing some other stuff with tanning hides. And so I started playing around with that and decided that trapping was fun, and I enjoy it, and I've been, like I said, doing it for probably 10 years or better. But I've always had a desire to just, like I said, use as much of an animal as I can.
And right.
So I started playing with tanning hides and using the box tan, you know, and the bottle of tan, and never was really satisfied with the way the hides came out. And so I went to a tanning school in Montana, and then learned, well, oh, that's why my hides don't come out like professionally tanned hides, because they're not.
There's a difference between home tanning and professional tanning. There's a few subtle things that are varying there.
Yeah, there are subtle things, and there are some larger things as well. Equipment and doing process, the chemicals you use, stuff like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So once I got out of that school, I decided that I wanted to play around with making some better hides, doing a little more professional tan.
Mm-hmm.
And I played around with that, and I've kind of decided, okay, well, this is kind of growing. I see a need. And so my wife and I, we built a shop, and I'm still in the process of getting it set up and built, and I've started gathering equipment. And so I am opening a tannery.
Right on. Yeah, no, and so that's, you know, that's kind of been, or was the main focus here of why I wanted to get you on the horn is, you know, as far as I know, Oregon doesn't have a tannery, a main large scale tannery. I think there's some people that do it on the side in a little bit higher quantities, but you kind of went full bore. From what I hear, you went and got a whole bunch of equipment and are getting ready to set up shop.
Yeah. Yeah. I bought a tannery, that was in Montana. I bought all the equipment, from a full scale, tannery up in Montana, went up and picked it up, and am in the process of putting it all back together. That's fairly large equipment, and we had to tear it all down and get it on a trailer, get it back here. Now standing it back up, getting it all put back together, and
making sure there's no spare parts left over.
Yeah, you know, that's a thing.
Yeah. It just means you made it better if you have spare parts, right?
Yeah, yeah. Trimmed the weight.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So when you say like larger scale equipment, are we talking to do quantities of 10 at a time, 100 at a time possible? Describe that a little bit. What would, I guess I don't know what a larger scale tannery, like how they do them in batches and things like
sure.
that.
Sure. So you can do from one hide to probably, you know, however many a guy can handle himself, or if you hire a crew. I'm going to just be doing this myself, so I'll probably do in batches of 10 or, you know, 15, depending on what kind of animal they are. The larger ones, obviously, you do less per tan. Setup. But when you're soaking the hides and stuff and using the chemical for tanning, doing one hide at a time versus doing 10 at a time, you use almost the same amount of chemical to do one as you do 10. I mean, it's based off of weight, how much the hides weigh and stuff, but your profit and your bottom line looks better if you do 10 at a time versus one at a time.
Okay. So it is literally a, you know, if you have it works out better if you have more hides to throw in at once than just one individual, because is there just something that, not to give away trade secrets or anything like that, it's just something initially that, you know, it's just easier to get those 10 in because it can do something in that whole process all at once.
Yeah, and you work in stages. So, you know, if you have one hide, you do one thing, and then you have to put it back in and wait for it to get done. And if you have more hides, you can have hides. You can have those 10 in different stages. So you just keep moving.
Uh-huh.
Keeps the downtime to a minimum.
Right. Okay. So it's just an efficiency thing.
It's an efficiency thing.
Gotcha. So now I guess, and again, that's not revealing secrets or whatever. What is the, you know, because I think most people are familiar with the box kit of different chemicals you can get to tan a hide, or there's brain tanning, there's bark tanning, there's all these different methods that you can look up and do. You know, and you kind of mentioned that there's a big difference from taking that little orange bottle of deer hide tanning formula, doing those steps and getting a tan hide to what a professional tan hide does. Can you kind of just describe the basics of a tanning process?
So there's a pickling process. Well, it starts with a rehydrating process. So you take hides that we've done, put up, got ready for the first sale, they're dry. And so you take those hides and you got to re-moisturize them, bring them back into a soft state. And so you stick them in a rehydration formula. Once they're rehydrated, you bring them out of that and you start putting them in a pickle. So you start making that fur or hair bind into the hide, into that leather.
Okay.
And you work through that pickling process of in getting any remaining fats and membranes and things like that off of that leather. So you get it down to into a clean leather. Move it from there into a thinning stage where you get it the thickness you want it. You shave it by doing that. Then you kind of move from that stage and you tumble it and dry it, break it, kind of. Then you move it into a tanning formula. And there's several different, like we said, you know, several different ways to do that. There's chemicals, and there's different chemicals depending on what kind of hide you're doing. There's different methods in doing that. There's vats of soaking, and there's lots of different ways that those get into that trade secret type areas, right? You know, so once you get that, then you go back into a tumbling stage. And I have big tumblers that I bought. They're 8-foot drums that spin around and take the hide and they fold it and drop it, and it helps soften that.
Okay.
That break that leather back down into a soft formula. Then there's different stuff you put in those drums to make that process efficient, and you use different products depending on the hides that you're doing. And you try to do I tried to do cats. If I'm doing a bunch of cats, I do cats. Coyotes, I do a bunch of coyotes. And you can mix the two, but I prefer to keep them as separate as I can. I'm doing deer hides. I'll do deer and elk together, but typically I try to stay with species.
Right. Well, and as probably most hunters or trappers know, you know, every animal has a different thickness of hide. You can, you know, a fox is probably one of the thinnest hides you can ever find, as many of us know, by cutting a nice little hole, in it while you're skinning, if you're not careful, and then, you know,
or even fleshing,
and you know, like an otter has a real nice thick hide right down the middle of his back, or, you know, not a bobcat or even a coyote might not have that thick a hide. So I can see why doing a batch of similar hides at the same time would be beneficial. That way everything's just kind of on the same, you know, level. It's going to kind of break down at the same point. It's going to, you know, soften up at the same point.
Right. It just seems more efficient. You know, I know I'm thinning, and these hides are all need thinned in the back, and, you know, they don't need as much work in different areas.
Mm-hmm.
And you're usually use different equipment with different species. And so, you know, if I'm doing a deer hide and a bobcat and a coyote all in the same batch, I've got every piece of equipment in my shop running at that point. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I'm staying with a bunch of capes, I'm using stuff that just goes with that. It's more efficient, you know, it's better flow.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So just out of curiosity, something like a deer hide versus like a deer cape versus say like a bobcat, what is what's the difference in time that it takes to get a tan start to finish?
Lots of the tanning process, you can probably have a month wrapped up in doing a tanning a hide, a batch.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them take longer depending on the animal itself.
Right.
You know, what it ate. The thinner hides are faster than thicker hides. Buffalo, they take a lot of effort, a lot of time, because that hide is so heavy and thick and it real tight grain. And time of year, the time of year an animal is harvested makes a large difference as well in the quality of hide. You know, say spring bear versus a fall bear. The later in the fall you get a bear, the better the hide is and the better it comes out.
Right. So I guess another question, just because I'm curious, you're sitting there and talking about the initial like pickling process, if you will, getting that hair to bind to the hide. Because just in my inexperience with tanning hides, I know like sitting reading on the little orange bottle there, you know, it says like a fox hide, it says soak in salt water for 15 minutes. That's it. Where other hides, it says soak for, you know, a day or however long.
Yeah.
Is it like a real on point? You need to let it soak for a set amount of time, or do you have a little bit of wiggle room, or is it a pretty strict, got to get it done
process? So Once a hide reaches the rehydration, there's a pretty tight window on when you need to move it out of that rehydration, because bacteria starts to form. Anytime bacteria starts to form, that starts degrading the hide.
Right.
Once you've moved from a rehydration into a pickle, once it's in that pickle stage, as long as you keep your pickle at the right pH balance, you've got some leeway. You've got a little wiggle room. You're still working with a hide that is not been tanned, because once you get it tanned, you've stopped that decay process. Up until you get into that tan stage, you're still working with a hide that is decaying. It's just decaying at a slower rate. And right. So there is always a sense of urgency, you know, just like when we trap an animal and we're getting ready to skin it, you know, you've got a time window that you've got to work in. You can't just, I'll do that next week.
Right.
It's not going to be there next week.
Right. It's a job.
Yeah.
And like you were just saying, there's a point where, okay, you got a little bit of wiggle room, but there's a point where wiggle room doesn't exist anymore. And that's interesting to me, because I imagine it's a whole lot of chemistry and figuring out, you know, the ins and outs of all this. And it definitely sounds very interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of science in it, because you're working with different chemicals and balances of salt and water, and if I add this chemical, I get this result, you know, time. So there's all this science involved there, but there's also an artistic side to it. When you get into thinning the hide and working the hides in and seeing to making them pliable, then that becomes into that artistic side of things that you're, because you're a lot of times working for taxidermists, and you know that's art. Those guys are artists, and so you've got to work that art side of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a neat balance.
Yeah, absolutely, and that, you know, that actually kind of leads me into my next question. What kind of tanning services are you going to offer? Is it going to be, you know, garment quality, taxidermy, like a dry tan or a wet tan? Are you going to have kind of a widespread of options, or is it going to be, you know, this or that or going on?
So there'll be kind of a widespread, because the equipment that I bought allows me to do a lot of different things. Okay. As far as like garment quality, wet tan, but most of it will be for the taxidermist, and some taxidermists like a wet tan, some like it dry. I kind of like doing a wet tan. That would be what I would prefer, but if they want it dry, it's not a whole bunch more to make it a dry tan.
Right.
Exotic animals, I won't be getting into right away. There's a certain process that goes with doing exotic animals. Some legal things.
Right. Lots of different regulations.
Some different equipment that I don't own yet that I eventually hope to get into doing those. Just because I one, I think it'd be neat. Mm-hmm. And two, it's pretty profitable to do those if you do it right.
Right. So just for the listeners who may not have done taxidermy or may not know quite the difference between a garment and a dry or wet taxidermy tan, can you kind of describe, I guess, just the difference in the finished product between them? Not necessarily the process, but just the finished product.
Sure. So a garment tan is a little more resistant to water. You finish it with a different chemical so that, you know, if you get caught out in the rain, it's not going to shrink up on you right away. You know, mm-hmm. you have a little bit of time. Now, once they do get wet, you have to take care of them right. When, mm-hmm. you know, once that fur coat gets wet, it needs to be dry cleaned and taken care of, you know, the proper manners. The wet tan for a taxidermist, they can take that hide and they get it frozen from me. They would take that hide and be able to, once it thaws, then they can start working it immediate. A dry tan, once that taxidermist gets that hide back, it's dry. So then they either have to rehydrate it a little bit so they can do what they need to do. For the, like, the end user, say you get an elk and you want that hide tanned, it comes back to you in a dry tan form. Pretty much you can at that point use it as a throw on the back of your coat or your couch, on the end of your bed, you know, whatever you want to do there. Bear, same way, you know, you mm-hmm. do them. Most bears, if you're doing them, they're going to be a rug. And I think most of the taxidermists like those in a dry form, to my knowledge. Mm-hmm. They're a little easier to handle, less weight in a dry form.
Right. No, and I just doing a little bit of taxidermy on the side just for myself, I can definitely see that. I like a dry tan when I get something back, most generally because I get so busy doing things that I don't want it stuffed in my freezer. It's a lot easier to hang it up in the closet. And
yeah.
When I reuse it, it's as simple as throwing it in a plastic bag in the refrigerator with some water and some Dawn dish soap and getting it to, you know, rehydrate. Nice.
Yeah. Well, and you've got more time.
Yeah.
Dry. I mean, you have a little more time when it's dry rather than when it's a wet tan.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I guess on the top of my head with that, you know, you mentioned, you know, a lot of the time taxidermists are going to get a bear and a dry tan. Are there certain animals that you won't offer? Like, would you garment quality a bear hide if somebody wanted to make themselves something, or would it just come as the taxidermy tan?
It would probably just come as a taxidermy tan, mainly due to the cost. So garment, once you start doing it, it's an extra step to do the garment tan, extra uh-huh. chemicals, extra step, extra cost. You get a bear, and that size is probably going to price it right out of making it a garment tan.
Right.
It's yeah. a lot easier to make a mink a garment tan than it is a bear.
Yeah. And I mean, most generally, I think a lot of people understand that when you get into those bigger animals, it's a pretty tough process.
Yeah.
I do remember, you know, trying to home tan a whitetail hide that my dad had harvested, and it's a lot of work. You know, and granted, I'm not set up to do a whole lot of tanning, or I don't do a whole lot of it, but just in the little bit that I did, man, it's a job.
It is. It's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think, well, at my age, what am I thinking? But I really want it to be kind of a retirement. I don't sit around well. I'm usually out dinking around, doing something, working around my place. I just don't sit well. And so I'm tinkering with something all the time. And I getting old enough, retirement's, you know, within the near future. And I thought, well, I got to have something to fill my time. And so I thought, well, this will do that. And it may do that and more. There's been quite a large interest in when the word started getting out. It's like, man, I've got people that are, I got taxidermists that are, they're ready. They're ready for me to get rolling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping to be rolling by August.
Okay. So right at the start of archery season here, you got bear season that'll be there.
Yeah.
So you'll be geared up and kind of ready to go as people start going out and getting animals.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my goal. Goals are good to have. They're sometimes missed, but that's the goal.
Right. That's cool. No, and it's kind of exciting because, you know, you're right there in the center of the state. I think a lot of people in the world that, you know, involve ourselves in trapping and hunting and stuff in the outdoors, I think a lot of people are excited to have something in state because I think most people in Oregon will send their hides to Idaho or Montana. You know, those are kind of our closer tanneries. And freight gets expensive.
Yeah.
And it becomes, you know, that extra little, well, you know, I'd really like to get this put up and tanned, and but man, freight's going to kill me, and it's already expensive. And, you know, that I think it's a real good benefit that's coming to the state, because I think a lot of people will utilize it. You know, and I'm hoping that, you know, do you have plans to kind of come to the fur sale? So if people do want to get their things tanned, they can drop it off with you and kind of get you some business that way.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll get some from that. I plan on still attending the fur sales. I'll have my furs to sell. I always sell a few green ones just because it keeps the buyers coming, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what we need, you know. We still need buyers coming and buying our furs, and so they can do what they want to do with them. I'm hoping to keep doing that, and maybe I'll sell some tanned ones of my stuff as well. But I sell a few now, just you know, like skunk hides and stuff. People want those to hang on their wall. Great. More power to you, you know.
Right. Well, have you, I guess this is going to be a loaded, probably out of there, their question, but have you, and you don't have to share it quite yet, because I'm sure it'll be tricky. Have you kind of figured out what pricing is going to be for, let's just say, your general, you know, let's say for a deer cape, comparative?
Well, I did initially when I was done with my tanning school, I kind of made a price list and stuff. But the price of chemicals, that was about 2 to 3 years ago that I did that tanning school. And a lot of things happen in life and I just keep pushing my time window back. That's why I say goals are good to have, but sometimes they're missed. Life gets in the way.
It does.
So I know I was one of my suppliers. They just sent me a thing that said they're having, you know, price increases and stuff. So I don't have a good price list yet. I'm actually in the midst of working on that at the moment, trying to figure up, okay, cost of chemicals and whatnot, and all things are climbing and going up, you know, power. My shop is heavily reliant on power, and you know, cost of that's got to be calculated in there and stuff. So I don't have a solid price list yet. Hope to have that all, well, got to have it shored up by the time I get open.
Yeah.
People aren't going to just bring it to me. Well, I think it could be, you know, between 45 and 100. I don't think that's going to pan out very well.
No, I think having a set price list would probably help.
Yeah. So in the process of getting that worked out.
Well, my last, and I'll make this my last and final question. Have you came up with a name for the business?
I have.
All right. Let's hear it.
So the name of my shop will be the Woodshed Tannery. And kind of my punchline is come to the woodshed and get your hide tanned.
And I like it.
Anybody that is of around my age, you know, you get in trouble, that's where you go. Is you get your hide tanned out of
the woodshed.
Yep.
I like it. No, that's pretty fitting. I think that's an awesome name.
Yep. I thought of it. I thought it'd be funny. My wife thought it was funny, so we that's kind of what we settled on.
Yeah, no, I like that. That's a good play on that old saying there.
Yeah. Yep.
Do you have a website set up yet? Are you in the process of doing that?
I don't have a website set up. A lot of my business, I think at first will be a lot of word of mouth.
Okay.
Stuff. I've got so much interest from the taxidermists that I have talked to that I really don't think I'll be lacking in business for the pace that I want to go. I don't want to take on more than I can get done. I don't want to make promises I can't keep. You know, tell them, oh yeah, I'll have that done in a month, and then 6 months later I'm still working on their hide. And you do that if you get overloaded, and a lot of the taxidermists right now, they have hides that are, they've been out for a year waiting. I had an elk mount done several years ago, and it was almost a 2-year process by the time I got it, you know, turned it in and got it back to me. I wasn't doing any, I didn't have any enough equipment or anything to do my own tanning at that point. So I was relied on someone else. And it was, I think, a year and a half that he had it out at the tannery.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know which tannery he used at that, you know, stage, but it was quite a process. And you talk to most most taxidermists, and that's a big time window for them.
Yeah. And it takes minimum half a year to get a hide back, that's a long return on investment, if you will.
Yeah.
To wait or something like that. So being able to, take a little bit of that slack up and be able to try and get it back to clients sooner, that's going to be a big help.
Yeah, that's going to be my goal, is to not take on more than I can get returned to someone in timely fashion.
Right. Gotcha. Well, I'm excited about it. I'm hoping that I get lucky enough that I can send you some stuff to get tanned this fall. I'm gonna spread the word myself, and I think you're gonna be surprised how many people are excited and interested in coming.
Yeah, I have been already. Like I said, I just, when I first started thinking about it, I went to a couple taxidermists and just said, hey, do you think there's room for another tannery around? And they all were, yes, when are you opening?
Yeah.
Whoa, okay.
Oh, man. Well, that's awesome. I'm excited to... Like I said, I'm excited for it to get going. I'm excited to see how you're doing with it here in a few months. And, the best of luck to you.
Thank you.
I like I said, I can't wait to have a tannery in Oregon. It'll be a good relief, I think, for us.
Yeah, I think so too.
Bye. Well, everybody, if you enjoyed the show, I ask that you please leave a good review on whatever platform you're listening to, whether that's iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcast, iHeartRadio, Alexa, or any of their affiliates. If you have questions, comments about the show, you want to be on the show, or anything like that, you can always find me at OregonTrapperPodcast@gmail.com. And we will see you guys next week. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.